Welcome back to another episode of the Inside Show podcast, episode number 2, or episode 413 of the regular Sideshow podcast, depending on keeping score. Hopefully everybody listening is doing their part and staying the hell home, keeping themselves and everybody else safe and healthy. And you've been jamming some new music or streaming music or literally doing anything to help the scene as we get to help get through this. More and more tours are getting canceled and rescheduled and rescheduled. And I saw an article on Metal Sucks the other day. They were talking to a big concert promoter. I think he was in charge of Devastation of the Nation, and like they had a laundry list of big metal bands he's worked with. And his prediction is that tours won't start up until 2021.
I read that same article.
And I was like, you know, as disheartening as it was to read that, it also is totally plausible and even likely. I guess it's one of those things time will actually tell. And, you know, like you keep hearing how this is a fluid situation. They seem to like using that term. So we'll see what happens. But I, you know, I was hoping for, you know, August we could have some concerts so I can go fucking see Rage Against the Machine, you know, 20 years after the first one got canceled. And this is also now 2 Mays in a row I'm not going to be seeing Bloodbath.
That's just not meant to be, man.
I mean, what's weird is they haven't actually canceled or postponed it officially yet, but it's less than a month from now, I think. And, you know, they have to come to the U.S. for it and whatever. So it's not happening. I know this. But, like, why? Why can't I see this band? It isn't meant to be, I guess.
The world is interfering with you.
Well, I mean, they've never been to the U.S. before, so maybe they're just not meant to come over here. There seems to be literally everything trying to stop them. But, and if you've been keeping up with the metal news, too, seeing other, you know, band members and industry people have come down, have contracted the virus, and, you know, the Benighted frontman has had it, the Mayhem's guitarist test positive, Tarja from Nightwish's father, I believe it was, passed away from the virus. Oh, no, I'm sorry, not Tarja, Annette, wrong ex-vocalist. Annette Olsen's father. So it's, and as you know about Gary Holt and, you know, Testament, Chuck Billy's, he and his wife, who, well, we'll be talking about Chuck Billy and his band Testament a little bit. So that's just another way it's hitting the industry, because great. So yeah, that's the COVID update.
Your bi-weekly COVID update.
Yeah, bi-weekly COVID update. And I also realized today, actually last night, that I keep forgetting to do Instagram posts. And I think it's because I'm stuck at home. And that's always been actually just as difficult as work to, like, post something. But you're just going to end up seeing lots of shots of vinyl sitting on top of my record player because I don't have much else doing. But I forgot. I need to, like, recalibrate my head on doing that. You think being on social media more, I'd remember, but
right. I've still been throwing up my Nick's car picks when it actually chooses stuff, and it had a couple rough wake up tracks this week. But yeah,
you did.
Oh, yeah. I think I texted you this after it woke me up. With, what was that? The one I posted earlier this week. Something extremely heavy.
Oh, the song Drip.
Yeah, after the Drip, it went to Rotting Christ as the follow-up. I'm just like, oh, man, it's going to be one of those days.
So was the Drip song short enough that it actually started another song before you got to work?
Yes, by like 5 seconds.
That's a rarity.
It is. I only ever get one song on a trip.
But, yeah, so if you guys are doing it, have discovered anything new and fun, new bands, new places to stream old concerts or new concerts, or, you know, this would be a good time for the labels, especially the big, you know, Nuclear Blast and Roadrunner and Century Media come to mind, to get those live DVDs up on Netflix or their own streaming service, or it's not YouTube. I prefer not YouTube. I mean, I have a few, and actually, I don't have as many as you might think I do. Mostly because I don't end up going back and watching them that much, or so I don't spend the $35 on something I'm gonna watch once. But there's a whole bunch I'd like to check out. If anyone's got a lead on those, that'd be cool too. So with that, some new albums you may or may not have checked out, we're going to review, and then you can make your decision from there. First up with that is August Burns Red's 9th studio album, Guardians. Yes, I'm counting Sledden Hill because it's a great album, and it is mostly original music. So with that, is Guardians is their 9th, and this band has actually had a consistent lineup since sometime in 2006, which I feel like you don't see a lot of nowadays. I think every time we go to like Wikipedia, that chart is just like, a couple inches high with like colored lines going everywhere and cutting off. And this one, they wrote a little more collaboratively than apparently they have in the past. And I think it shows. It feels like they took some of the ideas from Phantom Anthem. That does not click in my head right. It sounds like it's wrong.
I want to make it Phantom Amour, which is the Tooth Grinder album.
I want to make it Phantom Menace because it's Star Wars.
Yours is worse.
It is worse, absolutely. It is not fair to Phantom Anthem. But anyway, it seems like they took, as what they took and found in faraway places, things they were trying there, they smoothed out in Phantom Anthem, and I think they took it a little further in Guardians. You have some really heavy tracks in here. You have some lighter, more melodic ones, and ones that run both, like you'd want them to. And I think it's actually better and may stick with me a bit more than Phantom Anthem did. That had some really solid songs on it. I will say the breakdowns and stuff, as heavy as they are a little less complicated. I mean, obviously that's usually the more simple part of a song, but in ABR's...
But not historically for them.
Exactly. And they seem to be becoming simpler and simpler as time goes on, but the complexity of their skills is there in the rest of the playing, throughout the album. The writing has become slightly more straightforward than you had on, like, Messengers or Constellations, but still definitively August Burns Red sounding. That said, one of the biggest flaws of this album, in my opinion, and it takes me out almost every time, is the song Lighthouse. That song is not good. And it's funny because the verses of the song are, like, good. They're actually a little heavy. Vocally, they work. The chorus is just so bad. I mean, it's not as singy as it should be, and the line, the lyric of it, is just sounds like something out of some global fundraiser song. But everybody being in pain, like everybody suffering, and some people left that, and it's like no. And then they do my least favorite thing they've done, starting on Found a Faraway Place. Actually, no, I think that actually goes back to a Leveler. Where they do that kind of spoken word bridge thing with the bass behind it. It's like they've done that so many times, and I don't think it's been good any time. It's been more tolerable in some places than others. Here it's not, because it's paired with that painful chorus of the song. And the song is like right in the middle of... Well, no, it's... Yeah, it's actually just about the middle of the album.
No, it's the middle of the album.
Yeah. It's 5 out of 11, so it's just about there. And it's not... like, I keep trying to forgive it because there are good parts of the song, but my memory of it is not that. But I think there's plenty of solid stuff on the rest of this album, and I still continue to enjoy the album and this band. I've also kind of conceded to the fact that, like my expectations with numerous other bands, we're not going to get Messengers again. We're not going to get Constellations again. Maybe they'll prove me wrong. That album, 11 will just be, as Nick likes to put it, a box of breakdowns going down the stairs.
That's what I want. It's all I want from this band.
Yeah, but that said, we're 11 years removed from Constellations, or even 9 years removed from Leveler. That I've begrudgingly accepted that fact. So for what is it, it's good. I'm still giving it, I think, a 4, but it's... I'll just skip Lighthouse from now on. This is now a 10-song album.
Yeah, I mean, that works. I think I kind of just don't care anymore, I think is the trajectory I've taken with this band.
Okay.
Because they are simultaneously so dug into the sound that they do and also trying in all the wrong ways to shift, like, what their output is and do something new and different, but it never gels. We had that, like, Found in Faraway Places, Middle Eastern impact going on for a little while there. Like, their first two albums were great, and it was Boxes of Breakdowns. It was, like, fun. The breakdowns were crazy and weird. They were always out of left field, and it was great. And that, to me, is still what I want when I think ABR. And then they just kind of got into this, like, they're all mid-tempo. It's a very similar tone. It's a very similar style with kind of dialed back breakdowns and no big memorable hooks, a little bit of quasi-interesting lead lines. And that's pretty much everything else they've ever done, with a few songs here and there standing out as either being particularly good or, in the case of The Lighthouse, being particularly bad. But it's like everything else kind of blends together as just like they could all be one album. And then, like, they try a couple weird things here and there to make things stand out, but it's always like, well, we found a sitar, or here's something from We Are the World, or, like, you know, it's just, it doesn't, what they try to make it be different doesn't work. So when I go listen to this band, I just want the first two albums. And that, like, that's the problem, is that they never have managed to recapture that, or if they are going to shift their directions, do it in a way that's interesting. Because if I want just straightforward metalcore, I'm gonna go to something like After the Burial, or, I mean, even to some degree, earlier Architects stuff, instead of what this version of August Burns Red has become. And when you get a song like The Lighthouse, it's Bury Tomorrow, but not as good. It's not as heavy in the heavy parts. The chorus isn't big enough to give you that, like, big, anthemic, chanty, Bury Tomorrow feel. It's just kind of, like, watered-down version of all of it. And then the problem that you get beyond that is, you know, we're counting this as their 9th studio album, and we're counting Sleddenhill. They put out a fucking amazing album that shows that they can write insanely melodic good stuff. Granted, they had source material to pull from on that for the most part, but the reimagining, the collaborative nature of that album is epic. And, like, at this point, this band has become a Christmas band for me, because there are better versions of everything else they have done, and the album that stands out most when I think August Burns Red is a Christmas album. And that is kind of a problem. And they have not put out anything in the last decade that has convinced me otherwise. And every time we review an album, I'm just like, yeah, okay, great. It's an average, mediocre album that I'm going to fucking forget about when I stop listening to it. And that's exactly what this is. There's nothing inherently wrong with it. It's fan service for people who already like the band a lot. But if you're trying to convince somebody that this is a band you should check out, there are so many other bands that do what August Burns Red does better in 2020 than what they do, that I would never suggest somebody go pick up this album. It's just not interesting. This is a 2 for me. This does absolutely nothing on selling me to go listen to this band again, because I just don't care.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I realize I misspoke before about Sleddenhill. That is not mostly originals. There's 2 originals, but they're great reimaginings.
Right.
So I could correct myself there before somebody else does, Bob. Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
I can't disagree with anything you said. I think I just enjoy the band more, even. Yeah, well, here's what's funny, though. Looking at their catalog, I still go back to the first 3 albums the most: Thrill Seeker, Messengers, and Constellations.
And I gave up on Constellations. If you remember my review of that, I think I gave that a skip.
Yeah, but you're wrong, and you need to go try that again. especially the remix remastered one that's even crunchier. That is a great album. That was also a turning point for the band. That is indisputable. Because it was after that, you could... in hindsight, you can see Leveler and Rescue and Restore, like, slowly changing how they wrote and tried to include bigger melodies and stuff in there. And I think Constellations was the only one they nailed it on. But still held the breakdowns and heft from the first two albums. And those three are the ones I do go back to the most, but maybe this band has just kept me interested mostly through their live shows and stuff.
For sure.
Side note, I was supposed to be seeing tonight with Killswitch Engage, but guess what?
Yeah, right.
Sad.
I mean, their live show is always incredible, and like that is kind of the reason I won't fully write them off, is because they're extremely high energy, fun, great pits, good headbanging music. And like, you know, if anything on any of their discography comes on shuffle on something, I'm not going to skip it. I just like,
right.
We're 9 albums deep and they haven't sold me on something interesting since a Christmas album a decade ago. And that to me is a problem.
Right. No, I get that. I think Rescue and Restore is, since the Christmas album, now I don't remember all my numbers and stuff, but that's probably the best out of the other four. So you could have Pre-Sledding Hill, BSH and PSH,
right?
Because that is literally the middle of their catalog. So I think Rescue and Restore, interestingly, is actually I think the best since Sledding Hill, as enjoyable as some other things have been. And obviously you have everything before with Leveler being that, not so sure at the time. And live, their live album sucks. it's really disappointing, actually, because the track listing on Home is great because it came out in 2010, so you only had the first three albums. Mm-hmm. But the production on it is so bad. There's no low end. And the vocal performance is not what I have seen otherwise from him. And anytime that comes on or I have a mismatch in my like iTunes syncing or something, I get really annoyed. That said, I would be very interested in a better produced live album now and seeing all their catalog mixed together. Like you get at a concert now. That is something I think I would go back to.
It would help a lot.
It would help a lot. Obviously, we're not going to get that anytime soon, but hopefully something they have in mind for years to come. So with that, we got an average of a 3 for August Burns Red's Guardians. Please let us know what you think of this over on the SideshowPodcast.com comments or any of the social media, which you can link to from there. With that, we're going to play you the song Bloodletter.
Oh,
And that was Blood Letter from August Burns Red. Next up, as we mentioned earlier, we've got some Testament for you. This is their, what, 5 millionth album? I have not looked this up, but they've been around since the 80s, so I'm just assuming we're way deep in that. You're not wrong. I don't have to give you backstory on Testament. Like, if you're listening to this podcast, you're familiar with this band. We have reviewed them, what, 3 times now here? I think. Maybe. Is it more than that? I'm searching right now. No, we started with...
Dark Roots, because...
Dark Roots of Earth, Brotherhood of the Snake. Mm-hmm. No, that's it. Yeah, okay, so and we did a first impression.
This is their 13th album.
What did I say?
7 millionth? I don't know, but...
Oh, okay. Well, that was close. so... We really liked Formation of Damnation, right? Mm-hmm. Was the one that we're like that came out earlier in 2011 or 2010, I think, and we picked it up, enjoyed it, but it didn't make the show.
Oh, it came out in 2008, actually.
Did it really? Holy shit!
Yeah.
Wow.
So this is between Sideshow Radio Show and Sideshow Podcast.
Yeah, I feel like we've talked about it a lot
because it was really good.
Yeah, I mean, me, you, and Kyle all gave Dark Roots of Earth buys as well. So that was also very good.
Yeah.
Clearly. But then we had Brotherhood of the Snake, and it wasn't good. It was just bad. Like, the writing didn't feel very impressive. And above all else, and this is going to be my review of this album as well, is they have lost the thread on what metaphor is, on what simile is. Like, the writing is so just, like, ham-fisted and on the nose for all the lyrical content that even though I would argue the music on Titans of Creation is far superior to what we had on Brotherhood of the Snake, I still can't get into it because the lyrics are just so glaringly awful that it takes you out of it immediately. I mean, yeah, it's like, I just want to rail on the lyrical content of like every song with how bad it is, pulling examples of it, but like, I don't need to do that. You guys can go skim any song and figure out exactly what they're singing about. It's one of those cases where if the lyrics were less intelligible, if it was more screamed, I think I would enjoy this far more than I do. Because, like, the music is... The first one is nice and thrashy and groovy for Children Next Level. There's some more, you know, big open writing. The song we're going to play for you is definitely a little bit thicker and sludgier. Like, there's good diversity. And these guys are obviously great at playing instruments. Like, that's not something we need to debate. And there's a good range throughout Titans of Creation. It's just... Fucking every time he opens his mouth, I check out instantly. And that's not really something you want. I've been torn between like a 2 and a 3 all week on this because I like the music and it went the right direction from the last album. So I'm inclined to be a little bit more generous to it, but I just absolutely can't get into it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if Chuck Billy has ever been a great lyricist. He's been a better lyricist. And I'm sure if you pay closer attention to Formation, that there's like the song about 9/11 on there. Like, clearly, you know, he didn't mince words as to what it was about. But the songwriting was just stronger. And I think this album sounds like it's really trying to do Formations again. It is definitely better written than Brotherhood of the Snake. But that said, it's nothing new from Testament, which is fine. They're 13 albums in. You want their signature guitar stylings and songwriting and stuff, but it just kind of becomes another Testament album. And yeah, lyrically, it doesn't help. Like, City of Angels is one step away from being Night of Long Knives, lyrically. Yeah. It really is. And I think the only difference is he doesn't, like, mention the killer's name. but it is... I'm with you. It's stronger. It's much better writing, but somebody else should write the lyrics besides Chuck.
Yeah.
It's kind of what it comes down to. And it's, I guess it's a little better than I expected coming off of Brotherhood, but it's also very close to exactly what I expected, being it's a Testament album. Now, Dark Roots was good, and it showed a little more, I don't know if it's the right word, but progressive side of the writing. Like, it was definitely a little bit bigger and longer and more of a, you know, and Justice for All than, you know, Ride the Lightning, if you will. So in that regard, as opposed to Brotherhood of the Snake was just trying to go for the throat, I feel like, and it missed the mark. So this found a balance writing wise. I kind of want instrumental version of this album.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, I need to discuss the artwork for a second because this artist is very recognizable. So Elrond Cantor, Elrond Cantor. He's done the artwork for Dark Roots and for Brotherhood of the Snake. He did Soulfly as Archangel, the last Bloodbath album, lots of things. You've seen his artwork all over the place, from Hate Eternal to Hatebreed. But it looks far too similar to Chrysin's last album. Like, to the point of three...
Did he do Chrysin's last album?
Yes. Scourge of the Enthroned.
Okay.
So it's... I was actually sitting here scrolling through the site to make sure I had that right, and I'm pretty sure. Yeah. It's three cosmic beings with a big thing in the middle of coming up and swirls going around it. Like, it's pretty... The color scheme's a little different, but it's a little too similar. But actually, he did more artwork than I realized he did. Morris Prince from S, Embers of a Dying World. Actually, Soulfly's Ritual. Great artist. I can't really knock him so much. I just feel like, and I understand if Testament doesn't pay attention to Chrysin, but there's just a similarity there that I could not get over. It's pretty, though. I like the colors.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I guess that kind of speaks to the album, right? It's just like too similar to many other things. It doesn't quite elevate it at all.
Yeah. All right, I'm gonna be a little bit more charitable on this one. I'm giving it a 3 because, like, it's a step in the right direction. Yeah. So, I'm cool with that. You doing the same?
Yeah, I'm doing the same.
Okay, so that's 2 threes for Testament's Titans of Creation. We're gonna play the song Symptoms for you right now.
All right, that was Symptoms by Testament off their latest album, Titans of Creation, their 13th and latest for Nuclear Blast. So bring us to Black Label, where we are continuing our coverage of 20 Bucks Spin. That said, we don't have too much to add because for some reason, there is not a lot of information about this label on the internet. We tried again. I know we said the same thing last week, but I couldn't find any new interviews, no about section of the history. There was a Wikipedia page that was, I believe, in German. But
handy.
Yeah. But actually, though I can't read German, the couple points I could make out look like things we covered, and they linked, one of the references was the interview we discussed last week, or last time. So, not too much there. But again, started by Dave Adelson in 2005. He's still running the label. Huge mix of death, doom, and stoner sludge, and some traditional, I guess it's more traditional doom, thinking of Magic Circle. Very much in there. You know some of the bigger names. Like Spirit Adrift, Chemist, who's actually just leaving the label recently. One you may not know is their first album for the label is a band called Solothus. They just released Realm of Ash and Blood. It's their third album, first for 20 bucks spin. It is some big death doom, quite heavy. A little bit of atmosphere in there, and just guttural vocals. It's a little guttural, a little cavernous. Somewhat fitting, even if a little monotonous, but it creates some really dark, dark heavy shit. So, since that just came out, we're going to make that our example for the label for this week. So check out the song The Watcher off of Solothus's recent album Realm of Ash and Blood.
moving on, our last new one of the week. This is the third time we've covered this band. The band is Wake with their newest album, Devouring Ruin, out on Translation Lost Records. Remember when these guys were a grindcore band?
Yeah.
That was the thing that they were for a while. And they seem to have evolved themselves right out of that on this latest album. They were kind of going that way a little bit, I think we can say, on Misery Rites. Like, that was still very much so a grind album. The songs were all, like, 2 minutes for the most part, except for, like, this 1 8-minute track at the end that was showing some growth and development. And we probably mentioned at the time, this is an interesting way to end an album. I wonder where this is going for their next one. And then, like, to not miss a fucking beat, they're like, oh, okay, cool. And you get Devouring Ruin, which starts off with a 2-minute more, well, slow, quiet, doomy intro track. But, like, looking at track length, you're thinking, all right, it's another grind thing.
Right.
And it absolutely isn't.
Right.
And there are moments of grind throughout this, but it is so much more than that. It is so much bigger. There are straight-up doomy elements. There's, like, really good haunting guitar melodies throughout. There's a 10.5-minute track on here. There's a couple, like, quieter interstitial things, which, you know, usually not our jam. Though somehow pretty fitting for what the album is. I still don't really find them super duper necessary, but they don't bother me as much as many other ones. And the track that comes between them is one of my favorites on the album. It's just, it's big, and there's a lot of diversity and range going on to it. And really, for the week that we have had this, I feel like I haven't fully digested it yet, because it is very, very dense. And it is hard to give a genre tag to, because they very, very fluidly move through a whole bunch of different sounds that don't usually go well with grindcore as your root, like, you know, base that you're starting from. But that is a compliment to the album.
Right.
The fact that they can so seamlessly move from all these different disparate, Kyle word, elements and bring it into this really massive soundscape with production that is so fitting for what they're doing now. It's really an impressive listen. It's a completely different direction. I don't really want to say if it's better than or just different from
right.
what they're doing before. I mean, this is a band that we really liked for their more aggressive, like, take no prisoners approach to grindcore. And this is not that at all. But it's one of those rare cases where a band can just, like, completely divorce themselves from what they put out before that and change genres entirely.
Right.
And still have me being like, all right, I'm on board. Let's see where this goes from here. Let's see what they can do. Because this is really, really expertly done.
I agree. And it's funny. I wrote in a note to myself that this is not at all what I was expecting. And then I went back to Misery Rites and I tried Burial Ground. And I'm like, ah. This is what I could have expected, because it's like that sequel movie that starts right at the end of the first one. Like, that's what it's a very fluid transition from there. But overall, this is exactly what I wanted Tombs to be, and they refuse to actually do.
Right.
Except, you know, spots here and there. Somehow Wake has said, oh, hold my beer. And
yeah, right. We got yeah. this.
And it is a transition I can get on board with. You're right. It's fluidly written combination of black and doom and sludge and grind. And actually, it's more tags than I, like I said, I'm trying to, like, narrow down my iTunes ones. And then this album comes along and I'm like, well, fuck you then. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's all of it.
It is. It really is all of it. But how they managed to pull it off is just fucking impressive. Sure, some tracks may emphasize a certain style more than another, but how it goes from blasts that complement black metal and grindcore at the same time into just, like, doom drops, and it's really impressive. And equally as impressive as the songwriting is Kyle Ball's vocal performance, because it is dynamic and
mm-hmm.
powerful. This album is dense, like you said. It's dark and brooding and kind of like hopeless, you know, desolate like feeling, which I'm pretty sure it's exactly what they were going for, especially considering the album name. Like, mood-wise, this fits right alongside Death Atlas for me, as far as, like, well, we're fucked. This just takes a different approach at it. And on the springy weather we're starting to have is really, despite being trapped inside, and it's a really interesting contrast, gets somehow fitting. But, I mean, this is just... I hesitate to use the word mature, because I don't think there's anything immature about their previous writing. It's right. Just a different style. That said, this is, I think, levels even above that because of what they managed to pull off here. So,
yeah, this feels akin to, while sounding entirely different from, this feels akin to Devouring Radiant Light.
Okay.
This feels, you know, like Skeleton Witch just stepped outside that very normal, like, you know, what had become kind of rote for them, while always impressive and while still being extremely mature writing. They took that sound that they had so ingrained and that we were hoping for, and then we're like, no, we're doing something different. This is bigger. This is more. And, like, you didn't really see it coming. That is what this feels like. From a band that I didn't have quite as much, like, attachment to originally as I did with Skeleton Witch, where I was like a little bit more not on board immediately with the transition of Devouring Radiant Light. Like I think I gave that a 4 instead of a 5 and then realized, you know, my mistake going further down when I had more time with it. I just wasn't quite as sold on that. But where I didn't have quite that long relationship with this band, and they kind of came out of left field for us a little while ago anyways, when we were doing a random Bandcamp pick back in 2017.
Right.
You know, I didn't quite have that same attachment. So for them to be like, okay, well, that's what we did. This is us now. And have that drastic shift. Like, it came out of left field again, but in a way that I am 100% on board with from, like, the first
note. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it also plays very well as an album. Like,
it does.
It's a lot, but in a good way. Like I said, it's dense, it's heavy, it's dark, it really gives the atmosphere and feeling when you listen to this thing as a whole. Those little short interstitial tracks to the 10-minute track, to me, none of it feels like filler because of how it flows. Maybe those couple don't work as well on their own, but they don't need to because I think they help the album flow with it. So, yeah, this is a 5. This is
easily
this is
a 5.
Excellent.
Yeah, this is great. This is one we'll for sure be talking about at the end of the year. So we're going to play the song Kana Tavoro for you to end the episode with. But as always, we need to tell you to head over to SideshowPodcast.com, leave a review, let us know what you thought of anything that we covered. Pop on over to iTunes, rate and review things. That helps other people find us, keeps us going. We have to redo our merch page. We discovered recently that seems to have been offline from our lack of doing anything with it. So I tell you to go buy merch, but, like, you can't.
And clearly no one has been anyway, because it's not there because they haven't been buying it.
Yeah, so we'll have to go sort that out. Maybe we'll have to do some updated new products to kind of keep that interesting again. But either way, you can always support us by going to the website, clicking over on the Amazon links on the side, since, you know, everything has to be purchased online right now anyways. Feel free to get there via our site, and we'll get a little kickback for it. It helps out the show tremendously. That's gonna do it for 413 of the Inside Show podcast. We are going to play for you now Kana Tavoro from Wake's latest Devouring Ruin, and we'll see you in 2 weeks for 414.